The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Okay, let's go to the United States of America. Cal Thomas and Marion McKeown are with us. But before we hear from them, let's just hear a little bit of a brief clip from an interview that the challenger Donald Trump gave in an interview to Fox News, in which he appears to suggest he'd every right to interfere with the result of the 2020 election, and which he also criticised Kamala Harris for being nasty to Mike Pence.
Whoever heard you get indicted for interfering with a presidential election where you have every right to do it, you get indicted and your poll numbers go up. When people get indicted, your poll numbers go down. And now they have Kamala, who they say has many deficiencies, but she's a nasty person. The way she treated Mike Pence was horrible. The way she treats people is horrible.
Okay. Self-incriminating waffle there, Marion McKeown, from Donald Trump on a number of issues. Has he landed himself in it by essentially admitting during a television interview that he did try to interfere with the result of the last presidential election?
Well, you know, there's a new word being coined in the American lexicon recently, I've noticed, and it's criming. And it's used to refer to Donald Trump, to this rolling sort of, like, it's like every day he's like a rolling ball, that every day he picks up another little bit of potentially criminal fluff on him, and it all adds to the big mess of and stuff that he's entangled himself in. You know, it seems there, you know, on face value that, yeah, he admitted it and said, not only did he admit to it, he didn't try to excuse it. He said, I'd every right to do it, you know, basically. Now, whether or not that will translate all the way into Jack Smith's case in Washington, which, you know, there are hearings apparently coming up quite soon on, I don't know. But, I mean, Trump has never really made any effort to deny what he did and to deny his attempts to, you know, to sick the mob on the Hill. The other stuff around that, because the presidential immunity case is much more complex now to get into court, and key sectors of it won't make it into court if this case ever does, is ever tried. But yeah, you know, it just shows his arrogance, a sort of a mixture of arrogance. And I'm not going to say ignorance of the law, but it's just a belief that he has. I think that he really is above the law. The bit about Mike Pence, I mean, this stuff just writes itself. It's almost too easy, isn't it? You know, that Kamala Harris was nasty to him when he was the guy who called him all kinds of names and basically sick the mob on him. And also, if I think he may be referring to the debate they had, where at one point Kamala Harris was speaking and Mike Pence just spoke over her, interrupted her, and she said, I'm speaking. And you know, and the fact, obviously, that any woman would not allow a middle-aged white man to interrupt them, Donald Trump seems to take quite personally. You know, the whole thing, Trump just can't help revealing who he is every day. The problem is a lot of people seem to have no problem with who Donald Trump is.
Okay, Cal Thomas, let's start with you on the Mike Pence issue, because Mike Pence is a friend of yours, somebody who you admire greatly. I mean, what do you make of the idea that Kamala Harris is the one who is nasty to her compared to Donald Trump setting a mob on him?
Well, you're probably familiar with the phrase, it's like the pot calling the kettle black. I mean, if anybody could be accused of being nasty to Mike Pence, it was Donald Trump and his supporters, who, of course, on January 6th demonstrated outside and yelled, hang Mike Pence. He felt, and the Secret Service felt, that he was in danger, and so they had to hustle him out a loading dock door. I mean, this is crazy stuff. There's nobody who is nastier to people who disagree with him than Donald Trump. Look at all the names he's called everybody you can think of, from Nancy Pelosi to virtually any other Democrat. And by the way, I completely agree with Marion on the election interference issue. I think Trump has just handed Jack Smith, the special prosecutor, the rope that he can use to hang him, because that's the essence of the indictment against him, that he did interfere in the election. Trump had the right to question the results, maybe even to ask for recounts in some states, but not to interfere in the election. I mean, this is nuts. How many times can you say stupid? How many metaphors are there for dumb? I mean, his lawyers must be pulling their hair out.
But then why is it, Cal, that it seems that interviewers aren't challenging him more robustly on issues arising from January 6, 2020, and in particularly focusing on asking him, will he accept the result of this election in November if he loses?
Right. Well, I think many journalists, if they are in fact journalists, and many are have come over into journalism from activist or White House administrations, the trust that the American people are putting in the media, according to Gallup, is at an all-time low. And the same thing could be said of Donna Bash's interview with Kamala Harris, that she didn't ask some of the substantive questions. The most important to me was, were you part of this cover-up of Joe Biden's mental state? You were saying just a couple of months before he pulled out that he was fine, that you meet with him all the time, that he is engaged, he's articulate, he's knowledgeable, and clearly he wasn't. So that's a question that should have been asked right off the top, along with a number of others that were not asked. So journalism, I think, in America is at a very low state, whichever side you're coming from.
And I accept entirely, Cal, your contention that that is a question that Kamala Harris should be asked. But why is it that those who are getting interviews with Donald Trump are not pressing him in relation to what he did in January 2020 and as to whether he will accept the result? Because he's saying lots of things which would very much imply that he's preparing to try and object to any result that goes against his way, to call it false.
No, you're right, Matt. And I think it's irresponsible, and I think it begins to sow the seeds once again for the conspiratists who are out there, who will always find some pseudo example or maybe actually example of maybe one, say, illegal immigrant voting and then saying it's a problem for the entire nation. I think it's irresponsible. And as I said, this is one of the reasons trust in journalism in America is at an all-time low, right down there along with Congress.
Okay, Mary McCone, we saw Kamala Harris in her interview last week with Tim Walz on CNN, 6.3 million viewers. Is she going to have to do more, though, in expanding her speeches, what she's giving, to give actually people a reason to vote for her? Or does she need to? Is it that she is just there as a reason for them not to vote for Trump?
Oh, no, she needs to do a lot more, I think. I thought that she did a pretty decent job in that interview. I think, yeah, 6.3 million viewers watched it, which was twice almost what Trump and Vance got. And I'm sure Trump won't like that when they did their joint interview. And I think it was, Vance on his own got 6.1 million, but that's on Fox, where there is literally a captive audience there, and they have a much bigger audience than CNN normally. She did fine. I think her address, yes, in Pennsylvania, was doing fine. But she is piecing things together, I think, quite skillfully. There's a huge gender gap. USA Today just did a poll that showed a 34% span in the gender gap between the number of, like, women are rushing to vote for Kamala Harris now, men are rushing to vote for Donald Trump. And, you know, along with all the other gaps in America, you know, the religious gaps, the cultural gaps, the right versus left gaps, this is kind of interesting that this one is opening up so much. I think that so far her campaign is actually doing a pretty good job. She's had the shortest runway, as we know, of any candidate in US history, but she is getting out there. She is getting better known. Tim Walz is going out there and seems to be really charming the crowds in a very practical, the opposite of smarm almost, in a real, like, that tough football coach way. So I think that so far, look, everybody thought that this honeymoon has to end, you know, the post-convention one. Now, she didn't get a significant polling bump from the convention, but that's because the trajectory upward had started even before it, as soon as she sort of nabbed the nomination. But I think that they do need to do more. It's so tight at the moment. I'm basically disregarding all the polls because they're all just, you know, saying the same thing. This is a neck and neck knife fight, and she will need to appeal to the undecideds, and there are still some of them left.
How much do you think will we see, though, Cal, of Joe Biden in the coming weeks? He campaigned with Kamala Harris over the weekend in Pittsburgh, very much trumpeting his trade union background and endorsing her strongly, and indeed seemed very fit and healthy and able, particularly by comparison with the slumping Donald Trump.
I don't think you're going to see very much of him, Matt. She's pretty much on her own. But let me just respond to a little bit of what Marion said, because the people who are for Kamala Harris don't know what she stands for. She doesn't even have positions on her webpage. The only thing we know she's really for is abortion on demand. She hasn't been asked about Russia and Ukraine. She hasn't been asked about her proposal to spend $6 trillion when we have a $35 trillion debt. She hasn't been asked on anything that is really important. She says she's going to impose price controls. Well, she's even gotten criticism from fellow Democrats on that. Price controls never work. They didn't work when Richard Nixon tried them, and they don't work in countries like the old Soviet Union or other totalitarian countries that have tried it. It just doesn't work. But she's not. Nobody knows what they're voting for. If you ask, if any journalists ask her, and they can't get near her because her people keep journalists away from her, what she believes in, she doesn't really answer. Oh, she's for joy and moving forward and all these other euphemisms that don't really amount to anything substantive. So I think a lot of this is fluff. It's a lot of superficial. And if she ever sits down for a real interview, or more importantly, hold a news conference, which ought to be mandatory for anybody running for president, then maybe we'll find out what she really believes in. But she's flipped on so many things, it's hard to tell.
I want to stay with you for the moment, Cal. And President Biden said yesterday that the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is not doing enough to secure a deal for the release of hostages by Hamas in Gaza. And also, it seems that the supply of weapons and ammunition by America to Israel is being cut because there's growing disquiet belatedly in America about the atrocities being carried out by Israel in its retaliation against Hamas. Where do you see things going from here?
Well, Matt, the UK has just announced that it's not supplying any more weapons to Israel. One of the few things I learned in my worst subject in school, in mathematics, was if you get the formula wrong, you can never get the right answer. Israel is not the villain in this. Israel is the victim. It's been attacked. Hamas has as its charter, the goal of eradicating Israel and creating an Islamic Palestinian state. You can read it for yourself by Googling the Hamas charter. And when you have that as a goal, and you have a terrorist group like Hamas holding hostages, killing hostages, and they just killed this latest bunch, along with that included an Israeli-American, you know, if you're paying attention, that this is all being used to pressure Israel to make more concessions. Every concession Israel has made in the past, whether it is giving up territory, whether it is releasing Palestinian prisoners, some of whom murdered Israelis in exchange for one or two Israeli soldiers held by terrorist groups, have not been met with any concession by Hezbollah or Hamas. That should tell you everything you need to know.
I've listened to all of that, Cal, and I want to put to you that whatever the atrocities carried out against Israel, Israel has done at least as bad and as worse, because Israel is responsible for killing tens of thousands of people since the middle of October. There is now a mass panic about polio sweeping through the people of Gaza, and the Israelis involved in stopping supplies of vaccines going in. How in the name of God can that be justified?
Well, let me just speak to that, Matt. First of all, as we know, or I hope you know, the so-called Palestinians, the Gazans, who, by the way, voted a majority to elect Hamas to run their government, are used as cannon fodder by Hamas, hiding out in hospitals, hiding out in schools, hiding out in other civilian places. So when an Israel comes after them, there's going to be some collateral damage. That's just an absolute fact. And some of these numbers you're using are from the Palestinian side, the Hamas side. We don't know the exact
numbers. No, they're
numbers.
Independently verified by all sorts of charities, United Nations bodies. There's a bit of distraction in the background. Listeners may hear a bit of drumming going on. That's because we're at the Fitzgerald's Woodland House Hotel and Spa in Adair in Limerick for the Munster Rugby Awards. And I know the entertainment, which is due to start in a little while, involves a gang of drummers who are now going past the windows here where I am. So sorry for the background noise if it's distracting. Marion McKeown, I want to give you an opportunity to respond to what you've heard from Cal on his analysis of what's happening with Joe Biden's shifting position in relation to Israel and Gaza.
Okay, I think first of all, I just want to say that the murder of these six hostages is just heartbreaking. I was at the DNC convention when the parents of Hersh Goldberg Poland, the 23-year-old young American who was in Israel at a concert, was abducted during that awful day, that barbaric day on October 7th, which started all of this. And, you know, and to hear them, their grief and their courage and their strength and the hope, and they can express their concern for what's happening in Gaza, for the atrocities that are being carried out by the IDF in Gaza. There are no winners in this. And they said that in a competition of pain, there's no winners. And now their pain is so much worse. So for those parents of those poor hostages, your heart does just break. But what is happening? And, you know, I think the UK, their decision to stop sending certain arms, it's only about 30 out of a list of about 350. It's significant, but it's not that significant. But I think they're absolutely right to do so. I think America needs to start doing the same thing because, you know, Hamas is a terrorist organization. And what they did on October 7th, they knew their people, the people who voted them in 2007, but by the way, have had no chance to vote them out since, they knew they were going to suffer terribly. And what Israel has done is unforgivable and it's illegal and it is absolutely appalling. And there is no way that this should have been allowed to continue and that Israel's allies should have continued arming Israel while they were carrying out what they're doing in Gaza and what they continue to do. Now, it's clear that Benjamin Netanyahu is doing all this and is refusing to come to the ceasefire agreement, which his own defence people have said he should be doing. Just because he's trying to hang on to power, he's trying to hang on because he thinks Trump might win in November and that then, as well as saving himself from his own criminal consequences if he had an election, that then he will have carte blanche to do whatever he wants in Gaza as if, and it probably can get worse. So I think that's where we're at the moment. And I think that Biden has been far too timid on this, as he has been in Ukraine as well, incidentally, and that the incremental way that he's dealing with this has just been really ineffective. He's been talking about a ceasefire for 4 or 5 months now. Where is it?
Thank you very much. Marion McKeown, US correspondent of the Business Post, and Cal Thomas, nationally syndicated columnist in the United States.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.